just kind of go around, say name and where we're from, so we all know who's on the call. I'll go first, and then I'll just call out people by name. Jessica Rinner, Water Environment Services. Kenny, if you don't mind.
Kenny Kennedy Schultz, City of Oregon City Project Engineer. Dana Webb will not be with us today.
Thank you. Ron?
Ron Wieringa, Deputy Director with Water Environment Services.
Thank you. Darren?
Darren Cannaparoli, Public Works Director, City of Gladstone.
Thanks, Darren. Hakan?
Yeah, Hakan Alkabedi. I'm a senior civil engineer here at WES.
Thank you. Mike?
Mike Rice, Senior Civil Engineer with WES.
Thanks. Jeff?
Hi, Jeff Tolentino, City of Milwaukee, Assistant City Engineer.
Thanks, Jeff. Chris?
Yeah, thank you, everybody. Sorry, I was messing with my microphone there. I'm Chris Randall, Public Works Director, City of Happy Valley.
No worries. Thanks, Chris. Andy?
Yeah, hi, Andy Bachman, Senior Civil Engineer with WES.
Nathan, I don't know if you made it back yet. I saw your note that you were going to step away. If not, Nathan Seaver is on the call. Nathan is engineer in the Capital Group with us as well. Jim?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm Jim Montgomery. I'm with Wallace Engineering, and I'm working on the Oregon City I&I program with Kenny Schultz.
Excellent. Thanks, Jim. Your name threw me for a loop. I knew the name, but I'm not used to seeing you in the TAP meeting. So welcome. Good to have you.
Thanks.
And Akiko, do you want to say
Hello. I'm also
hi?
Sadman. Thank you.
Thank you, Akiko. So yeah, we do have a few just housekeeping things. I will share screen. It appears we have two sets of minutes that we haven't reviewed and approved yet. Let me share screen. Teams, Zoom, everything's different where the button is. Hopefully, share. I can make that a little easier to read. Hopefully, you're all seeing the September 21st meeting notes. Great. I don't know if anybody had a chance to read, or we can peruse on screen for a minute. I think the majority of this meeting, Jeff gave us an update of the 5-year CIP, and then we had a bunch of proposals from the City of Oregon City for the I&I reduction IGA, which all we voted and approved to recommend for inclusion in that program. And then I discussed a little bit about our I&I program funding and what we had budgeted for the upcoming years, just to confirm that we're somewhat in line with what our member cities and member communities are thinking they're going to be doing. Darren reported back to us about the bid solicitations for their work, and Dana provided some updates on their projects. Jen provided updates on the City of Milwaukee. And Eric Lace reported on West Lynn. Are people comfortable with approving these minutes as written at this time? If so, I would need a move to approve as written.
Move to approve.
Thank you, Darren. In a second, anyone?
I'll
Seconded.
second.
Sure.
Excellent. Thank you. And then, so that was those. Let me get the right ones. And then we also have the 1221, the Christmas ones. Very limited notes on this meeting. The majority of the meeting was Rob Lee and Yarrow Murphy presenting from Leeway Engineering on the work that they were doing in the city of Sandy. So again, very limited information here. Hopefully we're okay moving to approve these minutes. Can anyone do that for me?
Move to approve.
Thank you, Darren. Second, anyone?
I'll second.
Thank you very much. Yay! End of the housekeeping. So then I did do up a little agenda here. Hopefully everybody can see. So we've done welcome and introductions. We've approved minutes that we needed to. I wanted to just give an update on the INI regional reduction program. I did reach out to all of you, kind of doing some housekeeping again. As you all know, member communities submit a proposal on a project that they would like to include in this program. Proposals are necessary before any contracts are signed in order to be included in the program, as per the rules of the IGA. And so then, you know, once it's approved in the program, you go forward and negotiate your contracts. And it's very possible that the amount in the contract is slightly different than what was stated in the proposal. So we ran into some issues. My financial people need to have some documentation as to what we're contributing 33% to, which is actually the contract documents, what you all have entered into and agreed to do for the work. So I backtracked and contacted many of you, and thank you so much for supplying those documents. I was able to forward those on to finance and now have a summary sheet that says, you know, on X date, this proposal came in, this what it includes, this was the engineer's estimate, it was approved by the TAT. On this date, the member community executed a contract with so-and-so for a total amount of this, therefore 33% of that contracted amount they are authorized to spend. So if anybody has any questions or concerns about that, let me know.
I might have two, Jessica.
Okay.
First, just want to verify that you probably want the contract signed, sent to you, including all change orders that are executed, correct?
Yes. Anytime, you know, the initial, when we first do this and you execute the contract, and then if there's any amendments or change orders or at the time that those happen, yes, please.
And second, I know that my program is in the process of chopping up an awful lot of our scopes. How big of a headache is it going to be for your finance department if some projects come in very different than their initial estimates or are just kind of elapsed? Do you want there to be a process in place where we submit amended proposals if we know that we're going to be doing a massive scope change during design?
Good question. We haven't addressed that yet. I will go back and talk with Ron and Greg and leadership and confirm with them. The IGA does not specify, you know, when we approve as the TAT, we're not approving on cost. We're approving that the work is related to INI reduction and, you know, all that kind of stuff. As far as headaches for our finance, yeah, but we do that with all our projects. So let me circle up with West leadership and see how we want to address that. And it may be something, you know, because the TAT isn't saying, yes, you can have $1 million. They're saying, yes, we'll help support this project, which is designed to address or reduce INI in the system. So let me work on that one, and I'll come back to the group with an answer that we can discuss.
That sounds great. Thank you.
Yep. Cool. Anybody else? Questions, concerns? Because if not, I'm going to turn it over to Kenny to go into what the great work they're doing over there with lateral rehabilitation. Okay. I will stop sharing. Kenny, you should be able to take control.
Let me see. I should be able to. Let me also speak. There we go. Share screen. Let us share the proper. That one. That's the one. Perfect. That's not the one. All right. So just verifying that we're all seeing my slideshow and not my presenter's view that I'm staring at my other screen. Perfect. Thanks, Jessica. Alrighty, so I'm going to give this presentation myself, but I will start actually at the top of this presentation by asking Jim to unmute, and well, he's already unmuted, and introduce himself so that we can and kind of describe his role in the program so far and also in implementing the lateral program, so you can see exactly why I was really happy when he said he'd be willing to attend today.
Can you hear me?
Indeed, we can, Jim.
Okay. Yeah, I think in the beginning, the city's approach was really put into place because of the West leadership and the interest in sharing the burden of improving these systems. We did not have an agreement in place to implement the program when we started, and we didn't have anything in place to include private laterals. And so we expected quite a long, lengthy process to do that. It turns out that with all the work that we had done in arranging the agreement with WES and getting the program started, the city council had already agreed to at some point in time that they would fund the work of private laterals. And so even though we had started work on some projects, we pivoted very quickly and included that in the process. And so my work has been to coordinate all the different groups. We have a lot of engineers on the team, and there's quite a few folks at City Hall that are involved. So I'm managing that aspect of the program.
Yes. So when it comes to being the expert on how this is implemented and how it has worked boots on the ground, Jim is going to be the person to answer some of our questions when it comes to the policy side and how to structure specs and all that stuff. That's something that I dug into with one of his partners, Dave, a lot to develop. So I will be your best reference there. So we'll probably split the questions when they pop up. But to start with, I went through a few iterations of a title for this one, but at the end of the day, I settled on replacing laterals, how to work on private property, because to me, that emphasizes the most important and complicated part of this entire property or process, which is taking public works funds, public works rules, public works money, and working on private property and interfacing with hundreds of members of the public. So that is the challenge. That is the big problem we solved. So that will be what I'll be talking about a lot today. But as a general summary of what I'm going to be talking about today in a layout, I'm going to take you through kind of our broad strokes of how the lateral policy that we got was developed and then approved by the commission, present what our approach was, take you through three special considerations, which were things that Jim and I agreed are the most complicated part of this process, which is inspection and design of those lateral rehabs. How does that work? Structuring the contract to make this work. How does that work? And then interacting with the public. How do you make sure that you keep the public happy enough that they want to participate in your program? We've gone through one project so far, which is Lynn 1, which I'll introduce. And then I'll give you some lessons that we've learned and our kind of top line recommendations. So starting off on kind of the development of the policy, this graphic is one that's appeared in many of my I&I presentations, and there is a reason. This is the most pressing reason why we implemented a lateral policy. Mainline work captures maybe some I&I. Working out to the right of way is that captures a little bit more. But really, if you want to get large removal numbers, you want to get those high percentages that the West TAT and that the West IGA is shooting for, you've got to address laterals. So was what forced us into this in the first place. So we've seen empirically that these seem to hold out true in other communities, and we've got some high level indications that our community might even be a slightly more lopsided distribution than this. But also, there's just the reality that we did not think we could meet the West IGA goal without implementing a lateral policy. So if we wanted to take this seriously, we had to address laterals. So that's what we did. This still had to be sold to the governing body. And so we tried to show that the lateral program met the dual goals of our program that was passed by commission. So we want to meet that West goal if we can, but also we want to do this in a smart way. We don't want to just be throwing money at a problem without any thought. We want to get the most bang for our buck. So we want to make sure that we leverage every dollar we spend to remove as much I&I as possible. So when looking at some programs that have been implemented in other communities, which I will discuss a little bit more later, and then looking at our own cost histories for public main and public main and lateral rehabs. We got this picture here that's in this table that I've also shown a few times at different meetings. Basically, this might be a slightly rosy interpretation, but it is still very true that you actually remove more INI per dollar if you address private laterals than if you don't. And the reason is actually pretty straightforward. Even though working on laterals is complicated, it's expensive. It's also where upwards of a quarter of your removable INI is hiding. So public mains are cheap and easy to replace, but they also don't yield many results. So it's a very expensive way, and actually it turns out to be a very inefficient way to remove INI is doing the mainline rehabs. The more up towards the customer side you progress, the further you go, the more cost efficient it seems to get. And we will check, we'll do a reality check later in the presentation to see if we think that's been bearing out. So we're not the first ones to do a lateral program of this kind. There were plenty of examples. Jim did a lot of this research for me, and this is a table that we presented to our city commission. And basically, there's been a big plurality of approaches taken, mostly surrounding funding. So some communities have funded it 100% out of their pockets, and some communities have taken it 100% out of their customers' pockets. But Dave would, or excuse me, Jim would also definitely highlight that there's that entire bottom of the table is all DEQ consent decree. So a lot of INI programs, and particularly lateral programs, aren't driven by the kind of calculus that we're taking here at Oregon City and that Wes is implementing. A lot of it is because the government, federal government, comes in and says, you shall not discharge more to the water or to the waters of the state. You shall reduce your flows. So when that happens, you can kind of start seeing a split. St. Helens was done in around 2008. McMinnville was done a little bit later in the teens. Sweet Home and Sandy were much more recent. So those DEQ decrees and how they chose to fund them may be more tied to economic conditions and the fact that their hand was forced without any preparation than any actual real advantage of putting the cost on the homeowner. And so this was kind of our cost-benefit matrix that we used to evaluate these different options. You know, homeowner share, homeowner full, or city full. And in general, we found that they all had their advantages. You know, if we do some sort of a cost sharing arrangement, it's kind of middling across the board on prices. But what it is definitely most equitable because it recognizes that the responsibility for these degraded laterals on private property, it is something that has been allowed by somewhat lax city oversight, but it's also been allowed by property owners just not taking proper care of facilities that are ultimately their responsibility. So a cost-sharing percentage based on some general split of that assumed responsibility would be quite equitable, but it would wind up being more costly in terms of getting the work done and putting more money and putting more financial burden on property owners. Whereas with city-funded options, it's a pretty upfront, heavy, capital and intensive process. We have to pay a lot to get this laterals program up and running. But at the end of the day, in terms of total funds spent, if you look at both property owner and city funds, it's just more expensive to include the property owner in the decision to make, in the decision to fund these laterals. And this bottom check mark where we said all of these were less reimbursable, that was true, but that was because there's kind of an unstated option or decision that was already made in this matrix, which was all of this was going to be property owner money routed through the city. So we were going to perform the construction ourselves regardless. So a lot of that extra cost was actually assumed to be less based on contract efficiencies and more just bureaucratic nightmare of trying to extract money from property owners, making those initial upfront capital investments in the necessary budgeting software to process all these extra utility bills, tracking all these additional single loans that would have to be coming up. And it would just, the administrative headache of trying to handle even a minor amount of property owner money was not insignificant. So that, along with just kind of the general acknowledgement that in reality, the reason the city is doing a lateral program is for the city's benefit. The city wants to reduce INI. The city recognizes that the most cost-effective way to do so is to repair laterals. So the city, in the name of saving itself money, is going to be doing this lateral program. That was also just a pretty simple message to sell the commission. It went through once the West match was in place. It went through pretty much without comment and without any pushback. It was just, I'll talk about it more when we get the final push, but it was a shrug. It was kind of like a, why are we even here? You know that this makes sense. We know that this makes sense. Just do it. But there's a lot of pre-work that went into that. We had several failed lateral program policies before the commission, before we got this successful one. And do I say elected officials three times in this slide? Yes, I do. Is it because you better be thinking about the elected officials every step of the way in getting this policy adapted? You absolutely must. Know your commissioners. You've got to know, or your commissioners or your councilmen or whatever that governing board position is called. Know them individually. You have to know their temperaments. You have to know how to craft your argument in a way that they will accept. This is a difficult thing to sell if you aren't tailoring it to your specific board. But if it is tailored to your board and you take their opinions into mind and you present it using logic that you know that they will find acceptable, you can just get a shrug and just get out of our way and go do it kind of response, which is what we got as our final push. Because ultimately, our second to last attempt at a lat or our yeah our very previous attempt at a lateral policy died because the commission just did not want to do this without West backing. So that West backing combined with careful framing of our arguments and points is what gave our policy the final push into approval. So yeah, it was in a work session. We presented all the math. We said, here are all your options. We gave them a, hey, all right, so give us some general recommendation and we'll come back to you and we'll craft, a more final policy. And then they just kind of in the work session discussion, they said, I don't know why you need to come back. You've given us a complete lateral program. Here's the one in your slide that we like with that exact approach. Just do that and start doing it. Take it and start doing it. So, it's also a little bit of proof that sometimes for staff, a little bit of extra homework can go a long way. Even somewhat famously unruly governing boards can be quite ruly if they are dealt with appropriately. And that's just meeting them where they are, which is honestly how you talk to people. If I'm looking at our lateral policy and kind of how Oregon City kind of took the commission's direction and then said, all right, now practical implementation, how are we going to do this? There's a few pillars that our program stands on. The first is this is city paid. So a homeowner is not going to get a bill. There's not going to be a plumbing inspection cost. There's not going to be the plumbing inspector coming back and saying, oh, you need to replumb your house after we've done this work. If we're on the property, we fix it and we put it back, and then the property owner's left with no bill, period. But we also are cognizant of different kinds of property ownership. And so we've made a conscious decision to initiate the lateral program as a home lateral program. So we want to stick with simple things. If there are apartment complexes with complicated private collection systems, commercial parks with multiple laterals that branch in unpredictable ways, we'll push those off until later. And if some of those, commercial properties, those ones that are run to generate revenue, have severe enough problems that we think they need to be fixed, our approach is going to be to work with the property owner to fund it themselves, because our opinion differs slightly when you're talking about a homeowner who has limited budget and a lateral replacement is a massive imposition versus a property run to generate revenue that has budgetary lines set aside for ongoing R&R and that kind of thing. So that was also another division we chose to make. But also, we kind of chose a synergistic approach. So we want to recognize and build a program around the concept that the city and the consultant and the contractor are all going to work together to come up with a solution to this problem, as opposed to one party imposing it upon another. Everyone's views will be listened to, and everyone will be given a chance to speak, and everyone will be given a chance to contribute. And along that synergistic line, it also opened up the possibility for us of avoiding some redundant inspections. We will only do inspections of laterals during construction. Lateral launches were going to cost us as much, if not more, than our mainline CCTV. And it's not like the contractor wasn't going to do all those lateral launches themselves anyways. So if we could come to this in a good faith effort with a contractor to come to a cost efficient design build solution in the field, it kind of saves everyone money to make sure that the contractor is 100% on board with the method being used because they proposed it. And it also makes sure the city doesn't pay for inspections it doesn't need. Requires a lot of flexibility, which gets into some stuff that I'll talk about later. But also another central part to our program is building those community relationships. The INI program isn't invisible. We are on everyone's property. We are talking with every property owner. If we have poor relationships with the neighborhoods we're working in, we don't get to repair their laterals, or we at least don't get to have a positive interaction with them. You know, they would be less likely to accept our repairs. They'd be less likely to accept our landscape restoration, more likely to complain about all the various impositions that come up during construction. So, and maybe more so than in other types of construction projects, when we're working with laterals, there's a direct relationship between the contractor's ability to do their work and the quality of the beginning to end interaction with the homeowner. If beginning to end is poor, the contractor is going to not have an easy time doing those repairs. It's going to take a long time, and our prices are going to go way up. And then finally, good specifications. There's nothing about this that's simple. If you don't have a solid spec book that's both clear and precise, you are going to run into problems. We did a lot of work to make our specs clear and precise, and we still ran into problems. So it's the type of thing where you just have to be willing to work your way through learning lessons as you go, iterative. Didn't put iterative on the lateral program because that's kind of how the INI program works, but it is another one of those maybe inherent pillars that I'm not going to talk too much about, but got to be flexible. Now, for one special consideration, we consider a lot of different options for how to handle inspection design. Engineer specified during the design process or contractor specified after. So I kind of threw up here a general matrix of pros and cons, but what it boils down to is if you investigate during design, you think you know a lot and you're pretty sure that you know exactly what's going to happen, but all of us here are in the public works field. We all know what happens when plans meet construction. Things change. We understand that as agencies, and so we're flexible. Property owners do not, and so if you give them a plan months ahead of time that says this is what will happen to your property, and then the contractor comes out and says, oh, we can't do that. Here's something totally different. We're going to tear up your yard instead. Every one of those becomes a massive time suck for both the public works and public agency side, but also for the contractor side. So kind of one of the things that we made a decision on was we don't expect to know exactly what's going to happen. You know, you do your CCTV a couple of years ahead of time and then conditions change. And then the plan isn't worthwhile anymore. And particularly laterals, they are very dynamic. They go from being fine to being 100% clogged and no longer lineable very quickly, more so than main lines. And part of it is that eyes are off it, but part of it is also just that, you got a pretty small volume to a pretty large outside surface area, so it just doesn't take long for things to start creeping in and really have appreciable impacts on your section for a lateral. So there's kind of a more technical reason. And we just kind of thought that doing it during construction was more synergistic. It was leaning on everyone's expertise. At the end of the day, the contractor has an incentive to keep their cost down by proposing cost-effective methods. We get to save on doing duplicate inspections, and we get to basically have pretty direct control and ensure real-time buy-off with customers. So instead of them being contacted well ahead of time and then given a plan well ahead of time and then forgetting about that plan and then coming to construction and then having to be re-educated about everything, sure, they're contacted well ahead of time with a right of entry, but the process from beginning to end of getting their lateral inspected to getting it built, a couple of weeks. It's all real fresh. It's all real dynamic. So problems are found in real time. They're fixed in real time. It's just very flexible. And we have found in practice this has worked for us quite well and been a good answer to the conundrum of which of these do you want to do? I probably should have checked my next slide. But I think, yeah, this is mostly what I already hit on. But really got to hit that first point again, though. I cannot overstate how expensive it is to get those lateral launches, and they don't always go all the way up the lateral. And I don't know about the rest of your communities, but in my community, I have plenty of laterals that are over 100 feet long, so I can't get them 100% with a lateral launch anyways. So it was one of those things where it's like, pay a lot of money now for an incomplete data set, or pay similar, maybe contractors do it for cheaper. Pay less money to have the contractors do it. And if they need to dig in a clean out to finish the inspection, that's what's going to happen. And it'll just be part of the repair plan. So it's just one of those things where, when you think about it on paper, maybe the two seem really comparable. But then when you think about a real system with its real problems, it just becomes really difficult to try to characterize your conditions very well ahead of time in a way that's useful. And so, in order to adopt this approach, though, you really need to have good rules laid out, and those rules need to be in your contract. And the way I kind of like to describe the current I&I program general capital project right now is it's a design bid build package wrapped around a GCCM lateral project. So the main lines are done very traditionally, design, and then they carry it out. But the contractor is then taking a much more active construction manager or general contractor role in this, where they're working jointly with the engineering staff to develop rehab plans by property in real time. So basically, it is two separate procurement processes that are wrapped up together. And so it becomes incumbent on the agency taking this approach to make sure that you modify your boilerplates in a way that this doesn't come back to really hurt you, because it can. So this does require us all to wear a lot of hats. You've got to be collaborative in some areas and directive in others. And the standard specs. One thing that you're going to run into real problems with is that renegotiation clause. Almost all the ones that I've used before, the ODOT specs, I'm trying to think of the other one. Was it CSI, C something, whatever it is? They all have that. I think it's like at 15 or 20%, you get to renegotiate your unit prices. You got to exempt your lateral work from that clause. Otherwise, you're guessing blind at how much work you're actually going to do. So you just have to include enough money in your budget to cover all of it and then be. And then cut. And so, what you have to protect yourself against is the contractor having any grounds to come back to you and say, all right, you've cut my scope in half. Let's go ahead and renegotiate the unit price. So, in order to do that, though, it's one of those things where you can write whatever you want in a contract and it can be technically correct and it can be technically defendable in court. But if you're not crystal clear and upfront from the beginning to the end, and you don't just hammer the point repeatedly, I like to issue mandatory addendums with these contracts that say, here is things that I want you to pay attention to. And in bold letters every time is these lateral quantities are going to change. Expect them to be cut by half or more. I don't want there to be any excuses for them not being aware of this when they're prepping their bid. So I take the time and I take the effort to be very communicative. And basically, if you haven't heard me after I've said this the fifth time, I suppose then we do get to argue. But hopefully, by the second or third or fourth time, you'll have gotten the point, and you're either going to really jack up your bid price because this is an amount of work you don't want to deal with, or you're going to budget yourself appropriately and be ready to work with me. And that is kind of what happened. And so, kind of dipping into incidental work as well. Maybe this is more of just a general my philosophy as opposed to anything too specific, but I think it's very important to frame incidental work as something you don't care enough about to pay for specifically. And so if you want the contractor to do anything that's out of the normal, making that out of the normal process incidental to another bid item is not going to work out very well for you. There's going to be complaints about how much effort it's taking. There's going to be complaints about the amount of time that's being spent. We tell them where to put the incidental item in the contract, but that doesn't mean that that's where they actually hide their cost when they're doing their preparation of the bid. And that's not always because they're being dishonest. That is sometimes because where we put it in the bid is not where they think it belongs and what it should be tied to. So you could run into a situation where you cut a seemingly unrelated quantity, and then all of a sudden we're talking about this incidental item, this very important incidental item that, all right, now how's this going to get paid for? So I put it in red. If you really want to have control over how a task is done, if you care about it, you don't make it incidental. And so, kind of taking a look at the spec from that point of view, some of these things are stuff where some or all of these would normally be incidental. For instance, for CCTV inspection of laterals, recommend paying it twice because some laterals are only going to get one inspection. Some laterals are going to get two inspections because not all laterals are going to get repaired. And so if you're only paying, if you're making one of them incidental, well, then you're definitely paying somehow for that other inspection that isn't occurring. So if you want to make sure that it's all crystal clear and straightforward. Quantities can change. Play for it twice. Same on preparation or rehab plans. That's a lot of admin work. Give them a line item to pay for it per property. And then when you have that line item, you have a spec section. That's when you get to really lay out your rules of exactly what those plans are going to look like, what the interaction is going to look like, how they're going to have to go through the different processes for approvals, both with the building department and with public works. So the moment that there's a pay item and the contractor doesn't know what to look for, they are going to start searching through the specs for it. And then lo and behold, they will read your entire description of exactly what you want. So making it paid is just a way to guarantee that contractors' eyes get on it. And also something that we did, and this is something that a lot of other communities did as well when we researched their methods. We don't actually have different bit line items for different methods. Everything gets paid at the same rate. There's a hierarchy of preferences that we have for laterals. For us, it's pipe bursting before everything else, CIPP if we absolutely must. Not because of any re problems I have with CIPP. I'm actually quite fond of it, but somehow just giving a member of the public aligned lateral doesn't have the same ring to it as saying that we broke your old pipe or replaced your pipe. So that was more of a PR decision. But they just have to work their way through the hierarchy. Landscape restoration, recommend a force account over per each. That is one of the most random tasks where on some properties it's just sod. And on other ones, they're rebuilding an entire bespoke driveway from scratch. So you just kind of have to have a ballpark amount of money that you think it's going to cost. We seem to be going doing pretty well with $1,000 a property. And then just expect whatever. Also, private utilities, doesn't matter if you call in the four or call in the locates ahead of time. They ain't going to find anything on private property. So expect to have to move some water lines, some electric cables, whatever. So make sure that you have specs for stuff like conduit or water services in your contract so that you can have this relocation. Force count is probably my preference, though you could do a quantity that just changes. But force count just seems to make it more straightforward because those relocations aren't usually by length. Sometimes it's just a really random odd connection, and it's just some very strange apparatus that the contractor has to build. So force count seems the best way to handle that. And then public outreach. Your contractor is your public outreach officer, whether or not they want to be, because they have to interface with the property owner. Pay them for it. Tell them what has to happen. Otherwise, you're at the whim of whether or not you get a good contractor. I still am kind of workshopping through the exact units on this, but I think an hourly rate maybe makes some sense because it just makes it clear that, like, yeah, no, you're going to help us go out and get those ROEs that we're missing. You're going to talk to these people at 8 o'clock at night or at 7 in the morning when they get off from work. You're going to go ahead and make sure that the property or that you're taking personal responsibility, that the public is happy, so that when you then try to work on their property in a few weeks, that they're not pissed off at the very sight of you. So I want them to take extra steps. I need to pay them for it. And then change requests could be a problem with this approach. Contractors really hate it when they don't know the exact scope of work. So you can't tell them too often that the scope of work is going to change because maybe they are going to have to be prepared to have extra crews on call. Maybe they're going to have to be prepared to have some crews laid off or moved around to other work. If it's something that they're aware of ahead of time, then at least as a city or as the agency, we have less necessity to listen to them moan and do too much about it. But if we're just not upfront and clear about it, frankly, they have a reason to be upset. And while we could certainly try to stick to our guns, this is not an approach that works with a confrontational PM strategy. You have to be willing to be accommodating, to be reasonable, to be cooperative. I've already talked about this, but it's worth bringing up every single time because you're pulling up weeds to make sure that in your boilerplates, to make sure you don't run into problems with change of quantities. They're everywhere in those specs. You got to comb it word for word. You will miss some. And then finally, on educating and engaging the public, public information has to be out and it has to be good. Folks need to have a landing page that tells them what it is we're doing, what we're even talking about, and what to expect. So these are some, but not all, of the informational graphics we have on our suite of INI web pages. I think at last count, we have about 10, maybe 15 separate pages working right now for our various projects and just general information of the public. So we've taken outreach very seriously. So yeah, people don't know what cleanouts are. People don't know what a lateral is. Got to make sure that they learn that information. And then definitely everyone is going to really wonder what's going to happen to my prized bush. What's going to happen to my property? Well, I have a picture that shows them exactly what's going to happen. And I chose one for open trench. I have other ones for CIPP, for pipe bursting, to show that, like, yeah, most of them aren't going to bug you too much. If this happens to you, we are sorry. Also, getting rights of entries. This is maybe the most time-consuming part of the entire lateral program. It's the central task. It is the linchpin upon which everything else is built. This right of entry is not a right of entry. It is a contract. I mean, it is a right of entry, but it's very much the contract between me as the agency and the property owner. It's where I spell out all of the expectations, all of the ways that they're going to be contacted, all of the various notifications they're going to be given, all the times that they can and can't opt out of work, the abilities that they have to dictate work or not dictate work, everything about how this is going to run, it's all in that right of entry. And a lot of this language in the right of entry, I then mirror into my contract spec, because some of the stuff in this ROE is my responsibility. Some of it's actually the contractor's responsibility. So when you're drafting the ROE and your lateral spec, do them in tandem, because you're going to be pulling provisions from one into the other constantly. And yeah, The ROE has to be technical. It has to be legally sound. The cover letter has to be readable by anybody and very clear. And one thing we also learned very quickly, don't stop explaining yourself in those letters. If you have to send multiple letters to the property owner, don't assume that they remember what was in the first one. Reproduce all the applicable information every time that you send them a new letter. Otherwise, people are just going to wonder what a lateral is when the first letter told them that, but the second and third didn't. And yes, you're going to send 2, 3, 4, 5 letters to every property owner to get high response rates. I don't have a good answer to that. And really, another just central task, the lateral program. Property owners need to be happy with this process. And everyone is responsible for this in the team. The agency is, the consultant is, and the contractor is. We don't get to keep doing lateral work on private property. If the word gets out that Oregon City comes in, they mess up your property, they don't put it back, the contractor's rude, and then you get stuck with the bill. No one's going to sign any right of entries for that. But we've had the opposite impact because our outreach has been very solid. It's been very intentional. We've been very upfront. We've not shied away from the parts of this that would make some people leery. We want to be really upfront. And so instead, what we've gotten are neighbors telling neighbors, oh, you know, we got this letter. You should double check to make sure that your property is eligible or not. Like, people call in all the time asking if their property got missed or if they're eligible for this program. So public opinion for the lateral program is something you can't ever stop considering. You can't do this work, and everyone is going to be miserable if the public doesn't like what you're doing. So our first test was Lynn 1. This is our general overview street. So the S-shaped sweeping one that's in the middle of there, I think sheets C9 through 16, that's a collector street. Kind of lower down, one of those straight lines going from left to right, C23 to 25 is another collector street. And then C1's a collector street. But most of this is on local roads. So traffic control's pretty modest. Impact to traffic would have been modest if Charmin Street, that S shape, was wider, but wound up being more substantial because we couldn't avoid closing it periodically. So at a glance, here's kind of what Lin 1 included. 10,000 feet of CIPP, 100 laterals being rehabbed, bid price at $3.8 million. Direct construction cost for those laterals at $1.45 million, about 38% of the bid. I believe that price winds up being a little bit over $100 a foot. And it was an eligible project. So what went well? We got an excellent contractor that was low bidder. Landis & Landis has taken public outreach seriously in a way that I could not have hoped for. So they've been very proactive. Everyone loves their foreman. Everyone loves their construction manager because they just come out and they solve problems. So,
Kenny, can I jump in and ask who you're working with? I worked with them umpteen years ago at Clean Water Services.
Yeah, Landis & Landis worked with Cody is the current construction manager, but both Mike and TJ have been heavily involved.
Excellent.
Yeah, Mike and TJ also great folks to work for, very reasonable. You know, TJ and I know that we're going to just argue with each other for 20 minutes and then come to some arrangement on anything that's out of scope. So it works fairly well.
I've worked with Jeff Radich. Works for them as well, who was a really good construction manager, foreman kind of thing. And Jason Stepp is the pipe burster guru.
Oh, yeah, Jason
there,
so. Stepp. You will not find a better foreman. He is excellent. So if you get that crew, it's very encouraging.
Nice.
We managed to avoid change requests based on quantity changes. We did not avoid all change requests, which I'll get to in a moment. The process of that contractor-led design went pretty smoothly. We got permits pretty easily. Negotiations went pretty well with property owners. Everyone left happy. And honestly, we added a bunch of streets to this. Like, that sheet I showed you doesn't actually include two whole roads that we added. But we're still within budget, so our cost estimating was pretty good. And also, yeah, we're cutting about, I think, half to 60%. When we get to the end, I'll let Jim give us a more precise update on the budget because he's got it in his head because he is managing a lot of the day-to-day on my behalf. But so on a kind of an operational level from there, this has been going well. What needs improvement is we got lucky. Landis did a lot of this in kind of self-started a lot of this good public interaction. And it took a lot of work. And they decided that they need to be compensated. And I said, okay. So that change request did come in. We didn't go through the land use process correctly. So one thing to keep in mind is every single property is subject separately to land use. So if you have overlay zones, if you have anything that you wouldn't usually have to worry about as a capital project because it doesn't apply in your right of way, they apply on private property. We forgot that, and we had to scramble during construction to come to arrangements to satisfy planning and building. Interactions with the building department after the issuance of a plumbing permit and pulling for an inspection was not smooth. That was very difficult. And yeah, the admin workload for this was more than we expected. So pretty much everyone has been slammed, whether that's me. Just kind of making a lot of on the call, on the fly decisions to approve or deny certain expenses. Jim, who's been taking the lead on every property owner negotiation, all 150 of them, or Landis and Landis, who has also taken the co-lead on all 150 homeowner interactions. Nothing was simple. There was an archaeologist involved on one property. There was That particular level of complication was not expected.
I sorry to jump in again. Land use, really? I've never heard of that or had to deal with that with INI rehab. How, what triggered land use?
So the way that our, and this also could be a case of looking at Clackamas County code versus Oregon City Municipal Code.
Okay.
We are exempt from a lot of stuff in the right of way, but the moment you get onto private property, it's all normal land use. And our planning department is pretty adamant. Departments have to go through land use if they would apply, just like any member of Joe Public. So as long, unless an exemption is written into our code that exempts us from it, we have to go through land use.
Interesting, because even over in Washington County with Clean Water Services and in Forest Grove and Banks and unincorporated Washington County, we never had to. I thought there was some threshold of disturbance or something like that that would trigger it. Not so, yeah, I'll have to look into that and see
There is
why
a
it's triggered.
threshold, and that threshold is very small in Oregon City. So our code
Gotcha.
is written in such a way that we force everyone through a type two process, whether or not we ought to.
I'm glad you're not the only one a little frustrated with Oregon City permitting.
No, it is one of the things that we've learned quickly as we've gone from being less of an agency and more of a developer in these projects. Working on private property in Oregon City is very painful. So don't take my word as gospel on whether or not you're going to have trouble with land use. It's really kind of more of your how your code's written and how your planning department decides to interpret that code.
Okay.
Our commission has been very adamant that agencies need to be governed by the same code. So really, this seems to be the will of the people of Oregon City that everyone be held to the same standards, agency or not. So it's what we live with and it's what we work through. Just going back through, So that land use was after the fact land use was very painful. We're now doing a lot more of that up front, and we're also working on modifying some of our methods just ever so slightly to be exempt or writing in our own code exemptions. That is the approach that we're also taking. The ROE, our first run at it, the one that I probably ran past my lawyer 8 times. Basically rewritten from the bottom up after the first project based on experiences. There were just all sorts of little tiny holes that you wouldn't think of, but then every member of the public manages to find every little strange thing that could happen. And all of a sudden, you're running into another case where you're calling in a welfare check because of odd experiences with individual property owners. Like, I cannot tell you how weird of an experience it is to work on private property. You're going to run into all sorts of stuff. This reminds me of when I was working in the middle of nowhere doing engineering work, not in the middle, not in the edge of Portland Metro. So expect to have some unusual experiences. And for whatever reason, actually consciously, we left out CIPP and HDD. And then we realized that that was a dumb decision. So they're going back in for all subsequent projects. So this isn't so much like a here is the policy you want. This is just my list of top line takeaways for kind of how this entire process has went. And if I were giving advice to anyone that's thinking about a lateral program, here's my list of impressions. You can do this. It's possible. There's nothing legally stopping you from doing this unless your city has a, or municipality or county has a very different code than Oregon City. But it's not in state charter, it's not in state land use law. Public funds can be spent on private property. It's not straightforward, but it's quite doable. And it yields good results. We don't have super concrete numbers in from Rivercrest phases one through three. Phase three was approved for reimbursement by the TAT. One through two were not because they were pre the IGA, but those were to the right of way only. We don't really have a great apples to apples comparison because of when the models were done, but the peaking factors haven't changed much, making me think that our general INI problem has not been all that addressed by mainline work only in Rivercrest. And we blanketed that entire basin and brand new pipe in CIPP all the way to the property line. So if anything, our 20, 40, 65 split might be looking more like 5, 15, whatever the lateral policy will yield. So in Oregon City, it seems like it's an even more lopsided need. Like, if there was a way to do this without doing mains, I would, but also I wouldn't. Dollar for dollar, it would be cheaper, but it would be pointless. You need support from your community to do this. So I'm pretty out in the community, always advocating for the lateral program. I talk to our citizen involvement committee, I talk to our neighborhood associations, talk to city commission. They get regular updates from me whether they want it or not. I want to make sure that everyone is informed because the only way to really protect your lateral program, because there'll always be a handful of people, particularly early on, that are going to be really mad because they did work just before the INI program implemented a lateral policy and their $20,000 lateral program lateral can't be reimbursed because I'm not going to turn in a $20,000 bill that someone did by a random contractor to Jessica and get it approved. So I'm not going to spend that money. So at least early on, there's going to be a lot of pushback from the not small number of property owners that have to do work on their own laterals and are going to be really mad that they're getting screwed. I mean, I would say empathy is not a bad approach to those people when they call in. They are in a bad situation. You can sympathize and still tell them no. The cost savings has been realized. I am quite confident based on how the price split came in for Lin 1 that if anything, my cost split that I ran with for justifying the INI program and the lateral program in particular was actually almost not friendly enough. Remember how I said I thought that looked rosy? That was based on kind of the assumptions at the time. Looking at it from the point of view of the Lin one, I think that it's even more dramatic. So this works and it's cost effective. And man, coordinate with your building department all the time. If you're doing this, you got to coordinate with them all the time. They're certified by the state, they're authority from the state. You really can't push them around. You really need to make sure that they're on board with whatever in your spec, because if what's in your spec doesn't pass plumbing code, do expect change requests when the plumbing inspector fails a lateral that passed your own specifications. That has happened to us a couple of times, and we negotiated with building more than a few times ahead of construction, and it still wound up being a problem. So However many conversations you think you need to have with your building official, have more. And then finally, if you really don't want to do an I&I pro, or if you really don't want to do a lateral program, I wish you the best of luck. You're going to have a hard time removing a serious amount of I&I in your system without addressing laterals unless your system looks extremely fundamentally different than not just mine, but St. Helens, but Sandy, but Bentonville. There's a long list of folks that have done lateral work, and it's been about the only way that they could meet their consent decrees. So lateral program is the only way to move forward if you really want to get rid of I&I. All right. Jim, give me some closing thoughts.
Well, I think that our contract documents were really pretty effective. We did miss a few things that we had to pick up later, but for the most part, we haven't had to go back and restructure. We're working with a contractor who's worked with other agencies on programs just like this, so that makes a big difference. But I think that some of the things we've done, like I mentioned earlier, the right of entry seems cumbersome, but we were doing it for smoke testing. We were doing it for CCTV. And so it really was a slow ramp up for all the neighbors and all the people that were part of the program going to get their laterals worked on. I think it was really turned out to be part of the outreach, and the outreach has been a huge part of this project. And I think just the management and the coordination and the understanding that different agencies in the city have the things that they need to get done. I think that's really why we've ended up in a position we have now with being able to add extra streets, still stay within budget. And really with the cured in place work and the pipe bursting work, you know, folks may not even notice that their lateral got replaced because it's really that quick, and it's just not very invasive. So they're not looking at piles of dirt for 2 months on their street. They're looking at people being there for a couple of weeks and then moving on.
Yeah, and I guess as my final comment, Oak Lodge, one of your residents called me and asked if they were eligible for the lateral program. So at least one random resident in unincorporated Clackamas County wishes that they could get their lateral fixed for free.
Yep. Have realtors started calling you yet to see if
yes.
houses have been? Yeah. Because Washington County, that started happening once we were doing that. They'd call and say, was this house in this project area? Has the lateral been replaced?
Oh, it's even gotten more granular than that. Like houses that are selling, like both the buyers and sellers are checking in to see what the project schedule is and make that as whether or not they're going to condition a repair of the lateral or not. Like
yep.
you get really into the weeds.
Yep. Wow. Wild. Well, thank you. Thank you very much, Kenny and Jim. Honestly, you guys have... And how long you've been working on this? Only for like a year, 18 months, something like that? You've gotten your lateral program off the ground? 2 years?
Yeah, 2 years.
Two years.
February
yeah.
22, is that right?
That is really impressive that you've so much work and gotten so much established. Anybody in the audience have any questions for Jim or Kenny? All right. Well, I know we will when we start doing lateral rehab in our own communities. But yeah, no, excellent presentation. Kenny, if you can ever travel to any of the conferences, it would be great. PNCWA or something like that, sharing that. Wonderful. And please still go ahead.
I was going to say, I kind of wrote it with that mindset in mind. So it looks like it timed in about right.
Yep. No, excellent.
My real final closing thought, Jessica, for just anyone that's considering this, also reach out to anyone that's done this, including Oregon City, like Jessica says she's going to. But specifically, we've done a lot of this work already when it comes to generating a good ROE that works on the ground, good specs that function.
Yep.
You don't need to reinvent the wheel. You need to tailor it for your community, but you can start with what someone else has done.
Yeah. Definitely. When I was at Clean Water Services, you know, we shared information. I brought Clean Water Services information to Wes. Andy actually has been reaching out to multiple areas and seeing how they're handling pipe R&R and multi-year contracts, and everybody's willing to share. You know, we're all public agencies. It's public documents at a certain point. So let's work smarter, not harder, and share amongst ourselves. So Excellent.
There's no trade secrets here.
And please tell Jason Stepp and TJ and all them I said hi. I worked with them closely. They did all my rehab out in Alloa area. So it's been years, but it was fun to work with them.
Good to know that they've been doing good work for quite some time.
Yeah. Yep. Excellent. Anybody? The next thing I had on the agenda was just roundtable. Any questions or comments or things we should discuss as a group?
Well, I may as well pop in since apparently in the last meeting, Dana gave a general capital project summary.
Sure.
Maybe I'll first punt it to Jim to let us know how Lin 1 is going, kind of on a more granular and immediate level.
Yeah, I think that we are on schedule to be done by the end of April. We're paving right now. We're doing the CDF. I think all the main line's been done and we're just doing laterals. The budget really turned out to be generous in the landscaping area, and we ended up with leftover budget in the laterals area, I think primarily just because one of the things the contractor did was he chose to pipe burst through sags in the line. And then if that wasn't effective enough, he was willing to go back and then repair it in that method rather than repairing it ahead of time. He certainly didn't want to be digging up anyone's yard. And so he worked really hard at pipe bursting some of the most complex laterals that you might have seen in your career. A lot of those things really made his work a lot more effective. He bid it that way, and it worked out well for us. From a cost standpoint, we really didn't have any complaints or arguments over any of the bid items. One of the main things that we did that I think a lot of cities are doing is they're adding the clean out at the right of way. And so it helps us in many ways. It also helps with the construction, especially if someone doesn't want their lateral repaired, but we might be able to go in later. And different things like that. And so we would go out for every sheet, one of us would go out with the contractor and we would pick the spots that clean out would go, because that can be very contentious sometimes. And, our interaction with the folks there was really outstanding, and we never had any complaints about the locations, and it really made it, smooth. And it was really efficient because it only took an hour or so every week or so.
Great. Thank you. Hakan,
yeah.
You?
Yeah, I kind of wanted to ask Jim a question about that, the pipe bursting of the laterals. If you leave the belly in there and just pipe burst through the belly, doesn't it still just leave behind a bad lateral?
It actually does repair. A lot of sags can be repaired through pipe bursting.
Okay.
Now we CCTV that afterwards. So if it still has a sag, then they go in and dig it up and repair it. But they would just be adjusting the HDPE. They wouldn't be working with the original lateral, which is a lot more effective. And so
that makes sense.
And yeah, those CCTVs are reviewed by the building inspector. So. They're pretty sharp eye on it, and they don't want any sags left. So we're looking at, you know, quarter inch sag to a half at the most. This is on a rehab project, so that's a pretty tight standard. And, you know, we came out with 90 some odd percent of the laterals were passed by the building inspectors on the first inspection.
Cool. Thank you.
Is Landis and Landis still doing the pneumatic bursting, or are they doing static for laterals?
It's pneumatic.
Static.
Is it static?
Yeah, it's much quieter.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Not the thump, thump, thump. Yeah.
Not the thump, thump, thump.
But yeah, with the, you know, lateral, smaller diameter, less cover, and you're under tension, you seem to pull those sags out kind of more of a straight line.
So. Yeah. I think the three things that we think about is that we certainly want the elected officials to be happy with the process. And we want the customer to be happy, but we're also interested in attracting bidders. We want to have a good bid environment. We want to hear from them. We want to know what they think. We're trying our best to get a half a dozen bidders. And as it turns out in the metro area now, there are a good handful of contractors that will do either the cured in place or the pipe bursting and other different aspects. You don't have to go after the big contractors that need 10,000 feet to come into town and all they do is the main line. So the more we can encourage these folks to gear up and to bid on this work, the better it is for all of us.
Definitely, definitely. And I just wanted to pass along, I don't know if it's made it back to Jim and Kenny yet, West Advisory Committee meeting back in, I believe it was January, I presented about the INI regional funding IGA, and Mayor McGriff spoke up and said that she had firsthand experience of what you were doing in Oregon City. She was on site when you burst the lateral for the museum that she's associated with. And mm-hmm. She was tickled pink with the process and to see how it all worked and the contractor. So she was very complimentary of your program, the staff, the contractor, everyone involved. So just wanted to make sure that's made it back to you guys.
So. Yeah, I'd heard about that. And I was grateful that A, that she felt like saying that, and B, that she felt well enough informed about the program to give good feedback. So yeah. That's our goal as a program. We want our elected officials to know what we're doing and be happy with it.
Yeah. Excellent. It seems to be working. Ron, did you want to?
Yeah, I can provide a quick update for the group if there's interest on our permit renewal for the Tri-City permit, where pretty much everybody on this call except for Milwaukee discharges to. We've been going through a permit renewal with DEQ for a little over a year now. The permit is out for public comment, out in public notice right now. The public comment period closes, I think, April, don't quote me on this, like 22nd or something. And there's a public hearing around April 11th for DEQ to take verbal testimony. If you're interested in looking at it and you haven't heard or weren't, didn't get the notice, just reach out to Jessica or me and I can send the draft permit your way if you want to review it. I think overall it's a pretty good permit for us. We were pretty successful in our negotiations with DEQ. Some real quick highlights, we were able to get mass load limit increases for total suspended solids and BOD. We didn't get what we asked for, but we got more than we have now. So sort of in the middle. Just of note, we asked for mass load increases to the projected flows in our Willamette facilities plan, which are a few years out, and would reflect the treatment facilities, treatment technology we want to put in to manage wet weather treatment, which is kind of what we're talking about today. And we got stuck with DEQ there. They were unwilling to permit a future load for facilities that didn't exist, even though we're looking for certainty for what we're going to build. But they did acknowledge that our mass loads weren't increased when we did the membrane bioreactor back in 2012. And so we were able to do a mass load increase. So that gives us more room, at least during this current permit. We are getting an ammonia limit. The state's ammonia criteria have changed since our last permit was issued for Tri-City. And with the new criteria where our current outfall discharges, we have a reasonable potential to violate the state's water quality standards for ammonia. That's just because where the current Tri-City outfall is located, we don't get great mixing. And the ammonia levels that we're allowed to discharge came down significantly. And so we negotiated a compliance schedule with DEQ, which is really tied to the construction of the outfall. So, you know, the outfall is there for several reasons. But one of the reasons is regulatory compliance. And if we weren't doing that outfall project right now, we would be looking at designing nitrification facilities, which would cost us tens and tens of millions of dollars. So the outfall, because we get better mixing, DEQ acknowledged we will not have a reasonable potential to exceed ammonia criteria with the new outfall, and that goes away as soon as the outfall is complete. So that's great news for sure. We have a few new requirements around pretreatment, which we do for most of the cities to meet our pretreatment requirements and our permit. The pretreatment requirements are tied to to treatment facility permits. They're not tied to collection system permits, which DEQ doesn't issue anyway. So we'll have to make a few adjustments and might do some different work in your cities to meet those new requirements with industrial dischargers. And then there's just a lot more monitoring that we have to do. We just generally need to do more and more and more. That's how the permits work. Fortunately, we're able to absorb those costs with only slight adjustments to our long range financial plans. So we really shouldn't see any impact on city rates other than on rates paid by your constituents other than what we're already projecting for ongoing operation and capital. So that's good news as well. The last thing I'll note is that Kellogg is up next year. So as soon as we're done doing Tri-City, we'll turn right back around and get to the table with DEQ to do Kellogg in Milwaukee. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you, Ron. Any questions from anybody else or comments, topics? All good. All right. Kenny, I wrote down the question you had about, if the proposal cost varies greatly from the contracted cost and large amendments. So we'll figure out, I'll talk to West leadership and get an answer back to everybody on that.
Yeah,
All
because I
right.
think there were two parts to that. There was cost, and also there have been a lot of major scope changes.
Scope changes. Yep. Cool. Will do. Great. Well, great to see everyone. Thank you so much. Thank you again, Kenny and Jim. Wonderful presentation. And Kenny, you really need to take that to the PNCWA. All right.
Thank you.
Have a great few months, everyone, and we'll see you in the summertime. Bye-bye.
Thanks, all.